My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
And yeah, being background of analytics and a bit of programming as well, that's how we created this tool, a property research tool, it's named Suburbs Finder. So that's how it all started. And now we launched it around 2020. So now it's being used by mostly buyer's agents.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Sham, and in this episode, we're back with Gilbert Melgar, founder of Suburbs Finder. He delves into the story of an encounter that first piqued his interest in investing, the driving force behind his determination to succeed in property development, and how a $515,000 purchase he made became a property valued at $2 million. Remembering the early days of his first time living in Australia, Melgar shares a bit on the differences he's found between the land down under and his homeland, starting with what time shops usually close in the Philippines.
Any day, weekday, it's like 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. I mean, the shops, the cinemas, every day until midnight.
I think it's very, very hard working culture in Asia, because I know it happens not just only in the Philippines, but in, say, for example, China and Hong Kong, they're all closed very late. And that's the lifestyle, you know, everyone seems to be out and about after work and school. Yeah. Whereas here in Australia, as soon as shops close, everyone's all home anyway and just wants to be at home. Maybe it's the cold weather at the moment. I don't know. So you arrived here in 2011. Your wife got a job as an accountant, which is fantastic. And then yourself, at what stage were you able to get full-time work so you could also support the family?
After a month of or two, right away, yeah. Continue to work in the same industry doing, step back for a bit. I started again as a role for SEO again, because I don't mind as long as I get a job during that time. But just so I'm still lucky because I get to do the same thing, right, that I've been doing, SEO. And then during that time, I was working for one of the media agencies or digital agencies here in Sydney. And then, they realized and I've showed them that I know more other than SEO. And that's, they gave me an opportunity. You can do this, you can do that. Try doing this one.
Considering the high standard of living in Australia, Melgar and his wife opted to stay with their relatives when they first arrived. Little did they know that would open the door to the beginnings of their property journey.
We just stayed with her, my wife's distant relative, like third cousins. We just stayed there for like a month. So they help us, stay here for a bit while you're looking for a place that you can live on near to where you guys will work. Yeah, plus we're used to paying rent a month here. So we went on one of my wife's distant cousin's birthday. We went to that event, and they were talking about property, and then we heard one of her cousins talking about investments and all, and we were just having conversations and listening to them. and they were below their 30s during that time. So that was 2015. And they already have 10 properties combined. I was like, how are they able to do that? And they're under their 30s. That's the time that I became curious about it. You know, like, what are we doing wrong? Me being, you know, data guy doing the research, I started doing research about it, reading online, and started asking them questions, how did it, you know, explaining me, simple, you know, equity, extract equity, reinverse that. And I was like, what the hell is equity? I don't even know those terms in that time.
Leaning in on his growing interest in the newfound pursuit, Melgar recognized the need to thoroughly educate himself if he wanted to succeed.
I started putting time on it, learning by myself. And there are things that, you know, I can't really answer by just learning by myself. So what I did is I took different, I enrolled myself to different property education courses. I was like, this is too much. I need to pay $5,000, but still, you know, education is education. You know, if I'm able to buy one property and it will save me one, and then I can repeat the process, then I guess $5,000 is worth it. Coming from a third world country, like, we don't really want our hard earned money just to go to waste. Right?
How long before you actually first came and went, you know, I'm going to buy a property? Because obviously, for immigrant to come across, you know, to get your permanent residence, I don't know if there's any specific rules around purchasing property and saving up a deposit and all that kind of stuff. What kind of time frame did it take you to actually look at getting your first property?
During that time, we've already got our Australian visa, not visa, but citizenship during that time. Yeah, this only takes you 4 years. Right? So we got it 2015. Right? And after starting really serious learning about property, 2016 was the first property that we purchased. That even if we own, you know, we only have 10% deposit during that time, I was like, let's give it a crack. Even at 10%, let's just pay LMI. For us, you know, my wife being an accountant and me, we're both numbers people. We just said, let's just see it as an opportunity cost. We bought one for $595, so we just, you know, we just save, we were able to save 10% of that. And then, of course, stamp duty and all. We even borrowed money to my mother-in-law, like $20,000 to help us with the stamp duty and all. But we paid her back.
Many people would have second-guessed themselves when buying their first property, but not Melgar.
So we bought the property in Eldersley, somewhere in southwest near Oran Park, Narellan area. So we bought a four-bedroom, one bath, and two garage on a 630 square meter lot. And we're comparing that with another property there that was being sold for $550 during that time. But only a three-bedroom, one bath, and two garage. And I said, on a 700-square block, right? So smaller house, but bigger block. I was like, let's just go for a four-bedder. You know, at least if it, we don't have to do anything, it's there. Four-bedroom, we can have it. We can rent it more, right? Yeah. And the reason why we bought in that area, at least, worst comes to worst, you know, we can live in there.
In actual fact, this first was your investment property. You didn't buy it to live in. You bought it to look at renting it out.
Yeah. With the intention of, whatever happens, worst comes to worst, if we really can't afford it, you know, we can just move in there and live on it.
And I'm assuming that it was no problem to go to the bank and get a loan and set this all up.
Yeah, that's the first thing that we did. We made sure that before we made an offer, we got pre-approval first.
Holger didn't stop with the success of his first property purchase. He looked at the data in the area around New South Wales and Canberra, and soon his sights were set on Queanbeyan.
After that, so it took us a good year to buy another one. But the good thing with that, 2016, I don't know if we're just lucky during that time, it's because it's on the tail end of the property boom, but the property has increased and we were able to extract small equity from that. And aside from we're able to extract equity, we were able, because we are on 90% LVR, and we were able to put it now into 80 LVR. And we was able to buy an apartment unit, the two-bedroom apartment unit in regional area. In Queanbeyan, it's in the border of New South Wales and Canberra. Yep. So we bought that for $195, and there's already a tenant paying $250. So. It's positive cash flow, and it's really ugly apartment unit. So the reason why is, we have the intention to renovate it in that time. So when the tenant moved out, we renovated. Me and my friend went there. So the friend that I was talking about, he's the guy who has the 10 properties, right? So he helped me out. So we stripped the whole place. What I did is I bought a kitchen being sold in Gumtree. So those houses that are about to be demolished, so they're selling the kitchen. So we took it out, put it in a thrifty truck, bring it all the way there, have some chippy adjusted, work on it, and then new kitchen. When I was doing my research, looking at the numbers, during that time, Canberra already has at a high rental or a median rent. So people are going outside the Canberra area. So when I look at it, the nearest would be Queanbeyan, and at least if we wanted to buy in ACT, but the problem is we want to buy a property that we can own it, right? So we decided in New South Wales, not in ACT, because I think ACT can't really own it. It's still federal. So that's the reason why. So I said, let's just start with unit. Yeah.
But how many properties have you purchased over the period of time?
Now we're able to buy 5, but we sold that one, that apartment unit, because we already renovated it, made profit, and then we bought another one in Queanbeyan, next one, a couple blocks away. It's in the house on a 900 square block. That's the reason why we bought it. We'll develop it, and then bought another property in border of New South Wales and Victoria. So both through there. So now we're left with 4.
Coming up after the break, he tells the story of when he gave a property seller a bold ultimatum.
And I said, don't sell to anyone. I'm going to add, instead of 500, I'm going to add 15 grand more. But you have to tell the vendor they have to make the decision by the end of the day.
The personal reason that further electrified his passion for property development.
As an investor coming and as being a migrant moving here, when I move, you look right away for a safe and affordable accommodation, right?
He delves into how he's doing due diligence and research has been his key to success.
The thing is, I realized when I was doing those property courses, I paid 5 grand, but they're going to teach you, what you need to do.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Sham, and you're listening to Property Investory. With firm determination and a solid plan to develop the properties in his portfolio, Melgar faced his fears head on.
I guess the only fear that I had was when I was doing those reno thing, when you don't have any control on the, if you're doing the project management yourself, you don't have any, sometimes you don't have any control with the tradies. Yeah, that's the only one. And because for me, if, you know, buying a property, and at the end of the day, if you buy a property, I think the worst thing that can happen is nothing. Right? Because at the end of the day, you know, 5 or 10 years from now, it, worst things worse, it will not double the value, but at least it would have increased by 10% or 20%, right? I guess the issue with tradies, I guess that's it. But with finance, probably every investors who gets into their fourth one is going to have a hard time, you know, with their fifth one, especially with the tier one lenders. So yeah, but for now, we definitely had to step back. Because now we're in the process of, you know, developing two of our properties, because we bought them for the purpose of having multiple strategies, not just buy and hold. At least we can put in a granny flat, or at least we can subdivide, or at least we can develop them. Right? So we learned all of those things as we go along the journey. Our situation that we have three dependents, yeah, that's the one that holds us back, because we can, but with the property, with the asset type, or with the type of property that we want to buy, it will just end up buying the one that, you know, will not fit or the requirements. And we don't want to force it. We'd rather just wait than buy something that, you know, doesn't fit our requirements.
Multiple strategies can work for different properties. The key lies in knowing which ones are worth holding on to and developing. And Melga made sure he used the right strategy with his properties.
Well, actually, all four of them are developable. But the two ones we've already... the one in Queen Mian, so we bought that. That's a three bedroom house on 900 square block. So that's also the reason why we bought that, because it's on a R4 zone. So it's a high density zone with a 15 meter height limit. So I was thinking, oh, okay, it was being sold for 500 grand during that time. And I spoke to the agent, you know, said, I did my due diligence, and I saw, what can I do there, right? And I said, okay, don't sell to anyone. I'm going to add, instead of 500, I'm going to add 15 grand more, but you have to make, you know, tell the vendor they have to make the decision by the end of the day. And then, yeah, and I said, yeah. And the agent called me, they're happy to accept, you know, 15 grand more. And yeah, so I did my, continue doing the due diligence, and 2019, yeah, we applied for a development application for a 24 room new generation boarding house. So it's 24 rooms. It's like a studio apartments with en-suites, right? So it's three level, not three, but because the ground floor is an in-ground parking for 14 car space, and the manager room is on that level. So 12 rooms on the second floor, and then another 12 rooms on the third floor.
Oh, wow. And how many parking spaces did you say it has?
14.
Oh, how come only 14? Wouldn't they usually have a parking space for each room?
Because it's during that time, it's still under affordable housing policy for SEP, that for every room, the requirements is 0.5 parking, because it's an affordable housing policy. Yeah. Prior to that, it used to be 0.2. And then they increased. Yeah. So I said, oh, okay, this is what we can do. And then, yeah. And then it took us 20 months to get the DA out. A lot of back and forth. Council was pretty supportive because for them, it's going to be the first in that area, and it will also support the affordability rental affordability crisis within that area.
So Gilbert, just curious, have you gone back and did a valuation on how much that property is now worth? Because if you've purchased it at like 515, how much do you think it would be worth now with the DA on it?
Without the DA first, it just got revalued for 850. And then with the DA, because it's going to be fall under commercial, yeah, so it's based on the revenue and then the cap rate. So it's valued at around 2 mil.
Yeah, excellent. Have you figured out, you know, the costs involved in actually building this?
Yeah, the cost involved, the build cost would be around 3 million or 3.5.
Wow, three to build it. And how much would you say you could potentially rent it out for then for something like this?
Each room would be rented around 320 to 350 each room. So around 400 plus, yeah, per annum.
Wow. Wow, that's fantastic. That's a very good return. I mean, especially what you're going to have to do. But do you plan to keep it or are you planning to sell it?
Well, we're still see if we can resolve the finance. But, you know, exit strategy would be, you know, sell it with the DA.
With such a phenomenal achievement, Melga is keen on the lessons he's learned along the way, applying them on his next property project.
What I've learned is if you really know what you're doing, and if you need to have a good team behind you, an architect, a town planner, yeah. And because we had a shadow issue complained by the neighbors, and we were able to get around with it, update the design to comply. The second one is in regional Victoria, so that's our rooming house. So Victoria has a rooming house policy, yeah. So our application got approved in 2 days. It's pretty quick. So, yeah, because Victoria has a pretty straightforward policy when it comes to that. So as long as you comply, they've seen your right requirements, they've seen your plan and all, just stamp it and they'll say, oh, okay, you can proceed to building permit now. So that's where we are now, building permits. So now we're putting in seven micro apartments with, so it's like a boarding house, but with en suites and all. So it's like 35 square meters per room with their own en suite and kitchenette. But they still have their shared facility, like the dining, kitchen, and laundry. That's what I realized, you know, as an investor coming and as being a migrant moving here. When I move, being a migrant, when you move, you look right away for a safe and affordable accommodation, right? It just so happened that me and my wife moved here together, but I see most of the migrants, they move by themselves first, you know, leave the family there, either the wife or the husband's move here, and then, you know, they rent somewhere, or even they do a share house, rent a room. And once they get a job, you know, saving up, that's when they get the family, right? So I guess, you know, being on this space, or that's where we're focusing now, is I guess we're not just investing. I guess we're, you know, in a way, we're helping provide a safe and affordable accommodation.
Now, looking back through the years, he highlights a huge aha moment that started it all and the personal motivation that continues to fuel his passion for property.
So I'm into data. So I'm using, I was able to identify those locations using, you know, the research and all. So aha moment is during the COVID times that, okay, that's when I, why don't I create something out of those spreadsheets that I've been using? Because we were able, because before that we were able to help a couple of friends of ours, and it worked well for them, and they're also the one who pushed us, hey guys, why don't you, you know, create something out of it? And yeah, being background of analytics and a bit of programming as well, that's how we created this tool, a property research tool, it's named Suburbs Finder. So that's how it all started. And now we launched it around 2020. So now it's being used by, you know, mostly buyer's agents.
Because it saves a lot of time. And that, I think that's a great thing that you've achieved, especially if you've already shown it to work in your own situation and you've been able to apply it. And in other people, you know, I think you've got a fantastic head start, you know, to be able to assist with that. Because the challenge is the biggest, I think, challenge is the time to spend researching, you know, and you need to do it. It's important. But if you don't do it, it's not going to be.
Yeah, because the thing is, I realized when I was doing those property courses, I paid $5,000, but yeah, they're going to teach you, you know, what you need to do, you know, but there's one question they're going to, if you ask them, they're just going to say, do your own research, right? If you ask them, so where's the perfect place to buy? Do your own research. And there's no one size fit all strategy. It all depends, I guess, on your personal circumstances and based on your financial situation.
That's right. Yeah. And hence the reason why, you know, everyone has to do their own due diligence and research differently, because you're looking for a different criteria. And hence, you know, because all of us are time poor, we all use buyer's agents to be able to assist us to find it, because we want to be able to move quickly on doing the next deal.
But not only buyer's agents, you know, regular moms and dads investors are using it as well. But majority are, you know, the buyer's agents, because they're using it every day of their life.
Excellent. Well, congrats on that. That's really, really great to be able to hear that this came out of a need that everyone needs as well. And I think that's a great thing that you've done.
I guess the driving force is coming from middle-class family, you know, from a third world country, right? And then being here, you know, working your ass off, and then seeing that, what's our life going to be like when we stop working? Because you can only work for a certain age. We don't want to be dependent on the pension. And at the same time, we want to leave something, most importantly, I'd say, we want to leave something for the kids as well.
If you were to look back and see yourself 10 years ago, what do you think you would have said to him?
You should have started investing more. Should have get myself financially literate right away, because that's a thing, right? I mean, at an early age, I guess, you know, the generation now, they get paid more right away, but even if they get paid more, they spend more.
Looking forward to the future, what are you most excited about in your property journey? I know you've talked about those two developments. Is that sort of what you're going to be excited about?
We'll just continue doing the process.
How much of this success that you've achieved so far has been due to your skill, intelligence, and hard work? And how much of it do you think has been attributed towards luck?
It's a combination of everything, I'd say. It's hard to put in a percentage or breakdown on all of those, because everything is connected. Right. So yeah, I guess it all goes down to what's your goal. Right? If you really want to achieve something in life, you're really gonna work hard for it. Even if it's not property investing, whatever that is, you know, whatever your passion is, if you really want to achieve something or out of it, yeah, you're really gonna work hard.
Thank you to Gilbert Melgar, our guest on this episode of Property Investory.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.